Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, January 16, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll have cash grain analysis from Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, House Ag Committee Ranking Member Colin Peterson is softening his position on dairy in new Farm Bill legislation. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason talks with a University of Illinois farm management specialist about a relationship between cash rent and county trend line yields. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's see how futures settled for this Thursday afternoon. Hard red May wheat, 625¾, up 8¼. July, 622½, up 7. Soft May wheat, 579¾, up 5. July, 586½, up 5¼. March corn, 428, up 2¼. July, 441¾, up 1½. December, 452¼, up 1. March soybeans, 1314, down 4. July, 1281¼, unchanged. November, 1122¼, up 4¼. March soybean meal, 432, down 250. March soybean oil, 3805, up 6 cents. February live cattle, 139.92½. They are up 50. That's the last trade, as is the January feeder cattle at 169.55, up 15. And February lean hogs, 86.72½, up 12½. And those are your last trades and settlements from Chicago.
Support for WILL is provided by Risk Management Commodities, presenting a winter planning meeting on Monday, January 20th at the Best Western Hotel and Conference Center in Lafayette, Indiana. Registration begins at 5 with dinner served at 5:30. RSVP to 866-837-9027.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says a favorable mix of rain and sunshine will occur in Brazil along with seasonable temperatures during the next 10 days to support summer crop development. Net drying is anticipated for a while in the interior south, beginning in the next couple of days and lasting into next week. Argentina will become hotter over the next few days ahead of the changing weather that promises rain for all. Highs will frequently be in the 90s to 106 degrees, but extremes of 107 to 110 will be possible in a few western crop areas just before rain develops. Weather systems moving across Argentina late in the coming weekend through next week should bring needed relief to most of Argentina's driest areas, but it is still a little unclear how significant the relief will be in southwestern areas due to the divergence in the forecast models. Meanwhile, eastern parts of North America weather will be in transition over the coming week as a new deep upper-level low-pressure center forms over Hudson Bay and begins spinning frequent bouts of bitter cold into the central and eastern portions of the U.S. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I think that I'd like to start this afternoon on soybeans, even though we did spend quite a bit of time on soybeans this morning. Today's action put in a higher high for the move, but then came back and settled under yesterday in the March contract. What is it trying to tell us for the balance of the week?
Well, I don't know if it's telling us anything for the balance of the week. I mean, we are up for the week, so we would have to have some pretty strong follow-through on today's little reversal to the downside to give up that advance. I think we're in the early stages of an 8 to 9 week cycle up phase. I think we've got one of those lows in place, and this market should try to strengthen as we go on into the end of the month, first part of February, and then we'll look around at that point in time and see what kind of crop prospects we have coming out of South America, whatnot. The dry period in Argentina, at least, the weather guys are calling for some rain. Maybe that rain won't materialize as heavy and as widespread as what the forecasts say, and things may change. But what we're seeing here in soybeans is buying beans from the U.S. farmer and buying beans from the South American farmer. So when you get these kind of rallies like we had early in the day, you get a lot of selling pressure from the producer, and then that usually has a tendency to press it down as you go into the close. And in this case, we closed a couple pennies lower on the front months. I think we also have some unwinding of the long soybean, long front months, short back end months. Traders, we had some unwinding of that, and I think that kind of maybe aggravated some of the weakness that we saw here on the front month.
Would you be telling, if you were advising producers to hold their powder and not be selling into this particular rally yet, to let it ride for a little longer?
Well, I mean, each one has to make their own decision, but if I had, let's say, a third of my beans left or something like that, I would be hanging on to them. I give the market time to maybe even have a correction from this period of strength, so I'd have to sit through a few days of down in here. But I would think that the market should have enough momentum here to plow through the highs that we made during December. And on a lead futures basis, that kind of is in that 1350 area. If you just look at March futures alone, now that January has expired, those highs are right around this 1340. So I would at least let the market try to pop out 1340, see if we could get a push on up into the 50s before I'd let go of some beans. But, you know, that's just what I would do as an individual if I had, you know, 25 or 30% of my soybeans around, that's what I would do.
Would you use something like the 25-day moving average as a downside gauge?
I would say we could probably fall back to, right now, looking at the March futures, the 100-day, 50-day moving average, which kind of comes into play around 1295 or something like that. So we'd have about 20 cents yet to maybe watch a correction kind of settle down in here if one did decide to occur. We'll see how much follow-through to the downside today's reversal has. It may not have anything, and the weather forecast should change tomorrow morning for South America, and the market may want to take off again. So, but we're, you know, I like price action on all of this stuff. Ever since we had that USDA report, things do look like we're trying to carve out some kind of sideways to higher climb in here as we go into the first part of the growing season.
Turn our attention then to the corn And the March chart, it kind of looks like an up flag.
Well, that's the way I would read it. We had that big, massive outside up on Friday. We did follow through a little bit, a couple cents higher, I think, there on Monday. And then we spent Tuesday, Wednesday, and even early this morning kind of in a corrective decline. I'm looking at a lead futures chart, which is the lead month, and the 50-day moving average support came in at today's low here, about 25, and we closed higher. So if you would use that as a flag, the midpoint of that flag would be somewhere around 430. I'm just kind of eyeballing averages here, and you would swing it off the low, let's say 406. That's 24 cents.
455 or so.
Yeah, so it'd be the 450s, and then you could almost call, if we would break above this 38 level, you could almost double, it was a sideways trading range, and you could double the width of that sideways trading range, and you could maybe talk about something, maybe 462 or 463. So there is a shot, anyway, from a technical perspective, that this market might be able to, you know, give a shot to the upside, but there is a lot of corn around. And we did see tremendous country movement after the report and a day or so after that. So I do think a lot of the end users have at least filled up their bins, at least for now, so they may not have to chase it higher. But technically, we're in excellent shape here to close out the month of January with a beautiful monthly reversal to the upside. And I do think that this low that we recorded here prior to the crop report low could be a 45-week cycle low. And if that is the case, then the cyclical forces would argue that maybe this corn market might be in a sideways to higher trading range as we go on into the planting season.
Got about a minute left, and I just have this question for you. We haven't explored this ever on the air. Do you put any stock in real long cycles, like 60-year cycles, that sort of thing?
Well, those, yes, I do. Now, you know, when you get into a cycle that length, just about any cycle, you got to use a plus or minus 10% variance. When you get into the smaller cycles, like I use a lot, like 10 weeks and 20 weeks, you could probably increase that variance maybe as high as 20%. So the 55-year K-wave cycle, I think, is, you know, what a lot of people refer to. Some people call it a 50-year. Some people call it a 60-year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those longer-term cycles are still in place.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Colin Peterson now says he is open to considering a farm bill dairy compromise that House Ag Chairman Frank Lucas and staff are working on. This is a change in tone for Peterson, who in the past repeatedly asserted he had the votes needed to approve his dairy supply management proposal. House Speaker John Boehner threatened to withhold the farm bill from floor action if the final measure contained language on supply management. Peterson reportedly was briefed on Lucas's compromise earlier this week. Farm Credit Services today says that prices of top-quality farmland in northern U.S. Midwest and Plains stayed firm in 2013, but there were clear signs the market for average quality land was leveling off. and top corn and soybean producer Iowa benchmark farm land values finished up 3.4% for calendar 2013, but that was after falling 2.8% in the last 6 months of the year. In addition, Iowa land prices fell 3.3% in the fourth quarter compared with the third quarter. U.S. consumer prices rose last month by the most since June, driven up by higher gas prices. The Labor Department says its consumer price index rose a seasonally adjusted 0.3% in December. Gas prices jumped up 3.1% in December. Lawmakers are encouraging the Agriculture Secretary to allow low-income pregnant and nursing mothers to buy white potatoes with the vouchers they receive as part of the Federal Women, Infants, and Children program. That goes against the advice of the Institute of Medicine, which advises the government on health issues. The Institute has said that recipients of such aid already eat enough white potatoes. A number of state leaders from Corn Belt states say they will host their own public hearing on the Environmental Protection Agency proposal to make across-the-board cuts to the renewable fuel standard. Iowa officials announced that the event will be January 23rd in Des Moines. The White House, EP Administrator Gina McCarthy, and U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack all declined to host such a meeting. That, according to a news release from Iowa Governor Terry Branstad's office last week. The public comment period for the EPA plan ends on January 28th. The proposal is to cut some 3 billion gallons from the 2014 renewable fuel standard. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. A farm management specialist at the University of Illinois has fitted the county-wide trend yields for corn to the average cash rents in Illinois. Todd Gleason has more on how he found a relationship between the two and developed an equation to estimate the projected average cash rent.
Numbers are just fun to work with for some people, like Gary Schnitke. He's one of them. He's a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois. And over the last few years, USDA has released an annual cash rent for agricultural land by county report, which Schnitke couldn't just help himself about. He had to work with those numbers. The first thing he noted was the widespread in cash rents paid throughout the state of Illinois.
USDA released its county cash rents for 2013. There's obviously quite a range there. Our highest cash rent was for DeWitt County. It had an average cash rent of $385, and the lowest was Johnson County with $69 an acre.
Now, most would be satisfied at this point, but not Schnitke. He decided it would be really cool to fit the average cash rent in each county to the trend line corn yield, just to see if there was a real relationship.
Well, as you would expect, there is a relationship between expected yields and cash rents. Essentially, we developed an equation that would tell you what average cash rents were for any particular trend line yield, and that's reported in the paper. But it is minus 227 plus 2.7 times your expected yield, so that gives you the feel for that. We fitted that relationship, and that fits the data pretty well, but there are outliers.
Those outliers, for the most part, lay in one area of Illinois.
There's a number of central Illinois counties that have much higher cash rents than would be implied by that relationship, and those include DeWitt County, Logan County, Sagamon County, Macon County. All of those central Illinois farms have higher cash rents than would be implied by that productivity relationship, and that's likely due to just the competitive pressures in that area for farmers wanting to rent more land.
Simple economics: tight supply, high demand means higher prices. It also means, probably, that farmers in the area are working on much tighter budgets.
Well, let's just take Sagamon County. It's $110 higher than would be explained by that relationship. So, yeah, that would have a pretty big impact on profitability.
And what does that mean? Well, Schnicki thinks if the average cash price of corn is below $5 a bushel, and that's the expectation at the moment, then cash rents should come down for the 2014 growing season. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I can imagine that on this gift that we got last Friday, there was a lot of selling going on.
Yeah, we bought more corn on Friday and Monday on those 2 days than what we probably bought outside of the fall on any 2 days, really ever, as far as corn goes. So a lot of movement there at the end of the week with that little bump. And the last couple of days there hadn't been anything being sold, really.
I was kind of wondering, did any soybeans get sold, or are the soybeans, generally speaking, except for what we like to call gambling stocks, out of producers' hands now?
I think for a good part of people, yes. I just don't see a whole lot of ownership out there. You know, there's been most guys sold a good chunk of their beans right in the harvest. You know, I mean, excellent prices right into the elevator without having to store them on their own or pay commercial storage. And so there's just not a whole lot of beans out there to buy.
There's some talk that old crop beans could rally significantly higher if a few fundamental things fall into place. The technicals certainly are suggesting it. Could it lend strength to new crop, which would make some new crop sales advisable somewhere down the road pretty soon?
You know, I've heard that as well, and I guess I'm not probably in that camp, but if beans rally significantly on the front months, then by all means, I think the new crop will follow to an extent. I don't think there's any question there. It's been interesting to see the dynamic on this acreage talk. Before the report, people were leaning very heavily towards beans, you know, and then right whenever the poor report came out on Friday, a lot of guys are talking, well, this is going to change that a little bit, and we're going to be talking more corn acres. And then here in the last day or two, we're right back to talking more bean acres. So it's going to be pretty interesting moving forward.
So you expect that back and forth to go right on into March, huh?
Well, I think that the swing acres, by all means, you're going to be looking at, a lot of talk there. But I do think we're going to be heavier on bean acres, relatively speaking, than what we've been here the last few years. I still look for the bean acres to be 80-plus.
And go ahead and tell us then what your prices are today, please.
Okay, cash corn, 415 for next fall, 4.25. Cash beans, 13.24, and for next fall, 10.90.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Say, have you subscribed to our free Ag e-newsletter yet? You can do that on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Simply go and look at the right-hand side of the page, and you will find a link there in the navigation window to subscribe. It's a letter that comes out every week. It has technicals as well as fundamentals, tries to make the sense of where the market is going in the weeks ahead. willag.org. It's National Fig Newton Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1853, André Michelin was born. A French industrialist, he, along with his younger brother, founded the Michelin Tire Company in 1888. Among their many contributions, introducing tire tread patterns, low-pressure balloon tires, and steel cord tires. In 1868, William Davis, a Detroit, Michigan fish dealer, received a patent for the first refrigerated railway car or reefer. His car employed metal racks to suspend the carcasses above a frozen mixture of ice and salt. The cars railed meat to Boston using ice from the Great Lakes for cooling. But the car had a tendency at high speeds to decouple from the train, and their use was discontinued after several derailments. Davis's design ultimately was trumped by that of Andrew Chase, whose design kept the meat tightly packed at the bottom of the car to lower its center of gravity. That design was ultimately put into production by Swift and Company. In 1973, NBC aired the 440th and final showing of Bonanza. And in 1985, Leonard Nimoy received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. By the way, one of our favorite Star Trek episodes revolved around a special type of grain resembling wheat in The Trouble with Tribbles. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for our look at agricultural weather is Mike Denura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon.
There is some interesting weather going on in Argentina. First off, it's been very hot this week, but maybe more importantly to soybean producers down there, rain is on the way, but how much is really a question mark because there has been some divergence in the model runs. That's what different meteorologists have told me this week. What's the latest?
Well, there's no doubt that a storm system is going to move across Argentina early next week, sometime starting Sunday night and Monday, and then lasting through Thursday. We'll see one, two, or possibly even three waves of energy move across Argentina. Part of the reason it's a little bit difficult to determine just exactly what's going to happen is that the main system right now is still located far to the west in the Pacific Ocean. The Pacific Ocean is a data-sparse area. We don't have weather balloons. We don't have surface observations. All we really can rely on is satellite to try and figure out how that system has evolved and how it's going to evolve. So when you have a data-sparse region with a big storm system in it that's very important, computer models ingest all of that information, but then they tend to fluctuate as you go into the future, simply because each sample at any point in time can lead to real big variations later down the road if you don't have it exactly pinpointed correctly. So that's why it's unclear exactly what will happen. It is fairly obvious, though, that this storm system will move across Argentina. It's also fairly obvious that it will stay very hot right on through Sunday with high temperatures in the upper 90s to mid-100s in key corn and soybean areas. And these are areas, mind you, that since December 1st have rainfall deficits or departures of around 2.5 to 5 inches. So this is not really the right time to be throwing heat onto reproductive corn and soybeans that will be approaching vegetative and, or should I say, filling phases in the not-too-distant future. So definitely something to watch there. There more than likely will be thunderstorms. It's hard to imagine a scenario, even given all of this uncertainty, in which there are no thunderstorms in Argentina between Monday and Thursday. We would feel fairly comfortable forecasting 3/4 of an inch to 1.5 inches of rain. Mind you that they average about 1 to 1.25 inches per week in January. So even though a significant event is coming up, it doesn't look like a drought buster at this point, unless you believe some of these models, which really are putting down some heavy totals of over 2 inches next week. So real tough to say, but this is what we're watching.
There are a chance that the storm will catch Brazil.
Well, there is a pattern change taking place over there, independent of everything we've just talked about. A separate area of upper-level high pressure has diminished rainfall across that region over the last 3 to 4 weeks. That departs fairly quickly, though, over the next 1 to 2 days. So a sharply wetter pattern is forthcoming to Goiás and southeast Brazil. That includes around 25% of total corn production in Brazil and around 20% of soybeans. So a big improvement will be occurring there from a rainfall standpoint with all the uncertainty regarding how bad was it with this recent dry spell that happened from around the middle of December until today.
Thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome.
That's Mike Denura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.